Hi, this is James French.
This is Ted Diamond.
And this is the Awareness Connection podcast, where we discuss mind-body awareness, health, and human development. Today, I think we're going to continue on maybe some more specific topics from what we were talking about last week, which was sensory motor awareness. Is that right?
Yeah. There's more to say on that, yeah? So we should flesh it out a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, some more specific, maybe practical topics. Give people like a, you know, like a taste, I think.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Good. Yeah, I think we left last week. We were speaking about the practical problem of becoming more aware in activity. We said there was a real field that needed to be articulated, and along with that, a curriculum that needs to be defined. It's not enough just to do some relaxation practice or think that you could get some therapeutic result and it's going to somehow help you to become aware at a bodily level. It's more the problem of bodily awareness really is, it's a kind of a skill that needs to be learned based on real concrete knowledge of how the body works. And I think there's more to say about that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think we could, identify a few of those details. Yeah.
Yeah. I was all excited last time, with, naming this and that skill. Cause to me, the notion of a curriculum for this work is exciting, and it's very helpful as a student. It's not just helpful as an educator. It's helpful as a student, to know that, the general topic of mind-body awareness, the general topic of human development, there are actual things for you to know. This is a concrete subject. This is about sort of taking control of things and getting real about it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think back to when I was young and I had back trouble and that sort of set me on this path, when I think back to what I did and how, ungrounded my approach was and how ungrounded the different methods were. I mean, I was told you should stretch your back muscles. Well, that's a dangerous thing to tell someone to do if you're already having back spasms. Mm. It could trigger another one. It can aggravate your back. I was also told to do various exercises to try to strengthen opposing muscle groups. That's dangerous. Mm-hmm. If you're having back trouble and someone says, well, do leg lifts or something that's going to help you or strengthen your core. Well, again, that's a questionable suggestion to make to someone who has a vulnerable lower back. Mm-hmm. I tried relaxation, which was just vaguely based on just trying to lie down. I would turn the lights off, lie down in the dark, and just see if I could just progressively relax all my muscles. That got me in more trouble than almost anything. And when I think about how aimless that was, there's so much more that you need to know, and there's so much more that you could be concrete about.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's good to identify a little bit of that.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot of the, of course there's aimlessness, but there's also, even if you're being guided, someone telling you, like giving you a stretching routine or giving you a certain kind of strengthening routine, hoping to alleviate these problems, they're often examples of like logical deductions from a set of assumptions about how the body works.
Hmm.
If your back is spasming, then the muscles must be weak and therefore they need to be strengthened by doing contractile type exercises. And I think a lot of people don't know that there's even an alternative to that. I think that that's just like a ubiquitous theory right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it, like you said, it's an abstraction because it's based on the idea that there's something wrong, and if you correct it, it's going to somehow make your back work better. But think about it. You could be sitting for hours every day using your muscles at a completely unconscious level, have no idea really how you're using the body. Mm-hmm. And yet, when someone tells you, yeah, but if you stretch or if you do some other, strengthen some opposing muscle group, that's going to balance them out. You do that for 20 minutes and you think it's going to impact the other 13 hours you've been sitting and walking around. It's not going to have any impact. In fact, the opposite is true. Whatever you do during those 13 hours, you're going to go back to whatever you do habitually.
Yeah.
So the truth is that claim that you're going to help the back by doing something to strengthen an opposing muscle group or directly affect the muscles, mm-hmm, is based on a complete lack of knowledge of how the back actually works in daily activity.
Yeah.
And what I want to know, and we'll talk about that here, I want to know how the back is actually designed to work such that I could use it during those 13 hours better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how is it meant to work? It's meant to work with length. The muscles are, you just look at any two-year-old, typical two or three-year-old, and you'll see how the back works. Those are key muscles that support the spine and the trunk in its upright posture. You could see a young child sitting or standing, and the back muscles will be lithe, toned, and lengthened. And in the context of that lengthened state, they will work the way they're meant to work. They will maintain, they will be strong, integrated, and easily maintain upright posture for as long as that child needs to sit or stand or whatever, without any unnecessary tension and without any one group or single muscle overworking or other muscles doing nothing. And so when someone showed me, as you know, James, how you could lie down, not flat out just to relax, but with your knees up and your head on a pile of books, which helps to support the whole back and reduces the curve slightly because you're not, with the books under your head, you can't throw your head back. And with your knees up, you're not arching your back. Mm-hmm. And to allow the back muscles to lengthen, that's one of the most important things I've ever learned. Very simple, practical tip.
Yeah.
But it's based on real knowledge of how those key extensors of the back, the deepest muscles of the spine and the longer muscles just outside of those, how they're meant to work.
Mm. Yeah, and that's nothing about strengthening the muscles using contraction or heavy weights. It's nothing about stretching out muscles forcefully because of some theory that they're tight and you can sort of stretch them loose. This is a rational set of observations about how the back is meant to work. It's meant to function, like sort of how, you know, it's sort of like design specs.
Yeah.
And then right. If it's going wrong, then like, what do you do to sort of get the design back working, you know, or back to working?
Yeah. And like you said, it's real knowledge of how the back works that can apply to how you're sitting, how we're sitting here.
Yeah.
It's not just some kind of, fix that's going to somehow make your back work better. It's actually applicable in daily life in very concrete ways that you, if you're experienced with this work and experienced at this practice, you can begin to observe and maintain all the time.
Yeah.
It may not, maybe not perfectly, but you can have a sense that it's working as a concrete system that you bring to whatever you do.
Yeah. 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 And that's a very, yeah. Well, okay. So for what you want to talk about today, do you want to talk more about how the back works and the idea of restoration and the idea of like positions and that kind of thing? You know, do you want to go into more other topics as well? Like, the shoulders or?
Well, a few. Yeah. Let's cover a couple.
A few. Okay. Yeah. Great. So we talked about the back, for instance, and the idea that there's a sort of a natural function at play, and the idea of sort of restoring the function and seeing if we can maintain that throughout the day. And that's a more intelligent way of addressing problems.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we could say, and also the position that I mentioned, the lying down position or semi-supine position in which the knees are raised with the knees up and head on a pile of books. You can also learn basic positions in activity that encourage the same thing. For instance, the vertical, sometimes people call it the martial arts stance where your knees are bent, but you're vertical in the trunk. Mm-hmm. If you bend your knees so that you've lowered your center of gravity, it's like the martial arts stance. That position will, if it's used skillfully, encourages lengthening of the back muscles. The leg muscles will have to work, but they can also lengthen in such a way that you'll encourage the back muscles to work better. Mm. So there are positions that correspond to this that you could apply to sitting, standing.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's one, and that would be. We're talking about the back and how it works wrong, but that's a key system in the body because, in order to maintain upright posture, those extensors of the neck, back, around the glutes and through the legs have to be working in an efficient, lengthened way to support upright posture.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And very rarely are in adults because we tend to interfere so badly. Mm.
Yeah, that's actually a question that sometimes we get. You're using the word back, you know, if you have back problems, you know, this is just sort of a colloquial term.
Yeah.
Really what you're saying is like that, you know, there's a whole, it's really like the torso and the trunk.
Extensor
muscles along the rear portion of it. There's flexors along the front portion of it. And we're really trying to get the whole thing.
Yeah.
Function a little bit better with length, you know? So, I don't want any listeners to get the idea that we're just thinking about the back.
Yeah, right. Understood properly, it's really, a key part of the support for the whole trunk connects with the legs, neck, and head. So it's really the hub of the whole system as it maintains support in our upright human posture. Mm.
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic, Ted. So, I see, there's the idea of a natural function at play. The trunk is meant to work on the principles of lengthening, which we've discussed in previous episodes in a more theoretical treatment. But you're talking about something like, I've thought about this a lot. You're talking something like a Qigong type of position here. I've seen certain like static positions that, folks will hold. There's sort of like arms out positions, but I've seen people speak about holding positions for their benefits, I don't want to talk about Qigong because I don't know about it, but you're saying that there are certain positions that we can place the body in, whether it's standing, whether it's lying down, or whether it's seated, that will benefit the body. And that aren't just positions that we can hold in order to do things more effectively. We do them for maybe for that reason as well, but they're designed and used for their benefits.
Yeah.
I think that this is a thing. Yeah. I've heard people even in our field kind of dismiss this, which kind of surprises me sometimes. But
yeah, well, how are you going to bring about, if muscles are interfered with, which they are, if they're habitually shortened, or if other muscles are not working and not doing, not toned and not doing what they need to do, how are you going to get them to work unless you have some concept of structurally of how the muscles work within the context of bony part, their bony attachments. Mm-hmm. So we use positions to help bring that about. And of course, there's nothing artificial about that, because you're always in a position. I mean, if you're sitting, you're either, you're sitting for better or for worse. You're not sitting. So we're using the positions consciously to bring about improvements. But when the improvements happen, now we're just sitting better. Mm-hmm. I mean, the position, the most, efficient version of sitting in the way that we're speaking about here is found in a child at 2 years old, when they sit perfectly without any thought given to the problem, because mm-hmm. everything's working properly. But we have to relearn that at a more conscious level, and we use positions.
Mm-hmm. Like I had someone a long time ago tell me that, for instance, the position that you talked about before with the vertical trunk with the legs bent, there's another one where the trunk is not vertical, but it's, forward, and the legs are also bent. This is like the, sort of like a bent position, like an angled position.
Yeah.
I was explicitly told that this wasn't a static position. This wasn't like, like some kind of a position to hold. This was a working position where, you could use your arms better, and, it's good to stand at a desk like this. And okay. And then I got a very different treatment of this when I came to study with you. I sort of, had my eyes open when I came to study with you about this.
Well, if the only value you see in it is utilitarian, then you still beg the question of how you're going to get your muscles working properly if they're not working properly. So it's not just a utility. It's not just, I mean, obviously, if you're doing a martial art and many, then you're going to lower your center of gravity. Most martial arts do that. And if you're doing a sport, most sports use an inclined position, like surfing or, a traditional tennis swing, if you're not standing, but if you want to shift weight and shift energy into the ball, etc. Yeah. I mean, that's utilitarian, and that's fine. But there's also the question of what you're going to do to help muscles to work better when they're not. And we have to use positions for that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have that, then you don't have a context within which you can organize your awareness. So I guess that's sort of a corollary here. If you want the back muscles to work properly, and we've said that they work properly when they're lengthening between their contact points and toning, if you want that, you also have to have a concept of how the parts are organized. So you're not just vaguely being aware, but you're being aware in a structured way that corresponds to how the body parts work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I did my, relaxation, progressively trying to relax muscles, I was just collapsing further, and it felt good when I just felt like I was sort of in a relaxed trance. But then the moment I had to return to activity, I went back to all my compensatory habits, and my back hurt again. Mm-hmm. That's awareness without structure.
Yeah.
And awareness needs structure. We need to know how to organize our awareness so that we're not doing more harm than good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's part related to the position.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, that's another, those are other two other concrete elements of sensory motor awareness.
Okay.
Knowing how the positions work and knowing how to organize our awareness according to how the parts work in that position.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes me think, like, we were just talking about one of your forthcoming books where you're speaking about awareness explicitly as part of like a theoretical treatment. And we're talking about, you know, part of what we mean by awareness is like we are physical objects in space. Like we're living organisms that are moving around in space. Like these are what our most distant ancestors were up to as well. They were aware because they were moving around in space. And so something about our awareness here, like when we're, you know, in the 21st century, when we're living humans, there's something about the organization of awareness and our, the way that our bodies function that are intimately related, you know, like.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see what you're getting at. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like in a child, they're aware of their environment, but they're not aware of themselves. That's working instinctively. And you're saying that here we're speaking about some element of ourselves that we have to become more conscious of. As part of doing things more consciously.
Yeah. And you know, like a back problem, like you said earlier, you know, a back problem is never just a back problem. I mean, a back problem is you know, it means that the general organization of the body is somehow, you know, somehow been compromised, and it takes like really intelligent understanding about not only how the body is organized, but how the general awareness is organized, so that we can do some restoration work and we can actually make some headway with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, you know, that the awareness question is sort of a larger thing. We could talk about that, but yeah. So if you have I think just to cover another system, because I think we should talk about the shoulders and arms. Mm-hmm. I have to touch on that.
Yeah.
If you have a problem with your shoulder or arm, and I had that as well, because I'd grown up playing piano, and like all of us, we, you know, a lot of writing with a pen. So I had a habitual way of twisting, and it gave me trouble with my shoulder and arm a little. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem like that, as you said, it's never going to be isolated to the shoulder and arm. So you could try to treat the shoulder. But if you haven't looked at how the shoulder problem is related to the whole, you're not really treating the problem. You're actually treating the one area of which you're conscious that you think is the problem. So it turns out that, you know, when you look at it more globally, that a shoulder or arm or hand problem is always going to involve that same upright support system. Mm-hmm. So to address the shoulder and arm, you have to look at the whole thing and look at how you're interfering with the whole thing. And when you restore, again, muscle length, the way the system is meant to support, length in the shoulders, length in the arms to the hand, then the shoulder problem will automatically sort out, because now you've addressed the interference of which it is really just a part.
Yeah.
So here we have another system in the body, not just now. We talked about the back, but now we're talking about the upper limb, the shoulder and arm, and they're also learning how that works, how that anatomical system works as part of sensory motor awareness. And that also can be mastered at a more conscious level, so that you're not just, you know, doing some specific treatment or trying to fix what you think is the problem, but you can actually learn, identify how it works, how you've interfered with it, and get it to work properly as an ongoing competency or skill. Then there again, I was told, oh yeah, you have tightness in your pectoral region. Well, you know, do such and such exercises to strengthen the other opposing group, which are hardly opposing, but you know, the muscles in back are extensors. Those are flexors. So work the extensors in back. And that only got my problem worse. It didn't help. And I also was told, well, they're tight, so do some stretching. So I did stretching, I did the tightening in the opposing group, and all of that was barely addressed the problem, because of course the moment I went back to playing piano or lifting things, I was back to my old way of doing it. And no one told me that because no one knew.
Yeah.
Because like you said at the beginning, everyone has this abstract idea. Well, these muscles are out of balance. If you fix that, it'll all work properly. And meanwhile, 13 hours a day, you're using these muscles habitually and you haven't even touched that problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a real kinesthetic skill will address that whole thing and how it works.
Yeah.
It will be based on knowledge of how it works, based on restoring how it works, based on learning how to use it consciously in your daily life.
Yes. See, that's the multi-layered aspect of this. Like it's just fantastic. It's like, you know, you're not just sort of fixing pain, and you're not even just how the shoulders work, even just how they cohere as like part of like an upright support system. That's fantastic enough. Like that's very, very interesting. But then how the thing works in activity, like how to use the thing intelligently while you're doing something that you want to do, using a pen, playing the piano. That's a whole different level of things. You know, I think that's, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't shy away from that idea when we're using a machine, you know.
Yeah,
that's but true. But when it comes to our own body, we're much more likely to identify what we think is the problem. We feel like we have to do something to put it right, or find someone who could tell us what's wrong so they can cure it.
Yeah,
rather than learn the mastery of this instrument.
Yeah, it's true.
You're right.
You know, yeah, because you know it's a very familiar way of looking at things when you're like an experienced user of tools. You're a carpenter, you know, like you put your tools away at night, you know, you wash them off after you're done with them. But you also, if they're broken, you mend them. But you also ask yourself, or maybe someone who's more experienced than you asks you, well, how are you using it when you actually go and do something with it? Like, are you using too much force? Are you, you know, for example, hammering off center? You know, are you, you know, God, my dad was really good at thinking like this. He had machines for way longer than their normal life because he knew how to use them properly. And then he knew how to take care of them when he wasn't using them. He knew how to store them, knew how to mend them. So it's a very familiar concept, but here, like it's really applying the same set of concepts to us. It's like, you know, if there's something wrong, you have to figure out, well, how was it designed to work in the first place? Get that going. And then how are you using it when you go about your normal daily activities? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And your father valued that. And for some reason we don't, you know, if we have a fine instrument, we know that we have to take care of it. We know we don't want to leave it out in the rain. We don't want it to be subjected to too much heat or cold. We know we have to store it properly. We have to handle it properly. And yet when it comes to the human body, we disparage the body as an instrument. And we think somehow if you're learning how to use it, it's too precious, or we're being too precious, you know. Mm. But if you think about it, if you're going to be using your hands in a fine motor task for hours a day, mm-hmm. and you don't really think about how you actually support yourself upright, how you support your arms in front of your body, you're going to strain to do that. I mean, most people can't sit for 10 minutes without being uncomfortable. That means that the upright support system has been interfered with, and you can't possibly use your arms and, you know, your shoulders and arms in an efficient way if that's happening. Mm-hmm. And we just basically ignore that. And on top of that, if something goes wrong, instead of seeing it as a sign that we need to give attention to that, on the contrary, we say, oh, something went wrong. There's bursitis, there's some specific problem. See if I could treat it and get back to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, it's a shame, but it's also not, you know, actually addressing the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's all these sort of weird, like, you know, there's all these sort of weird objections, like, you know, we expect, for example, like a classical musician to be really taking a lot of time learning how to handle their instrument, learning how to do fingerings precisely, let alone learning pieces, you know, just spending a lot of time and even a lot of time taking care of their instrument. They will send it off to a professional who puts on gloves and knows how to do it. Might spend an hour stringing the thing, maybe even more than that, you know. But it's much different when we're acting on our own physical behalf. Much, much different. Like, you know, if you're expecting someone to feel normal or comfortable about, for example, sitting in a chair in a supported position and thinking about getting their back working, in other words, spending a half an hour or an hour or something like that, sitting quietly like this, that's a whole different, I don't know, that's a big ask for a lot of people.
Yeah. Right. And if you practice it, then you're seen as being sort of quirky or you're doing something kind of, extreme or,
Okay.
How about James, how about another system? How about breathing?
Breathing. Yeah.
I mean, there's another key bodily system. We talk about it in sensory motor awareness. It's in, you know, we don't devote a huge amount of time in that book. I mean, because I've written about breathing and voice as kind of its own kind of larger subject. But breathing is part of the musculoskeletal system. We don't often think of it that way. We think of it as one of the key vital functions. But it is a vital function, and it happens at a cellular level. But we breathe because we make bodily movements with our musculoskeletal system, and breathing depends on that. So again, if you try to fix breathing by trying to breathe differently, you're not actually addressing the problem, because the problem is the body as a whole.
All right. So
there's another one. Yeah.
Yeah. So breathing is actually like a physical action. It requires muscle action. It requires the movement of bones as well. You know, it goes hand in hand. And if there's a problem with breathing, the implication is that there's something the matter with how the bones are moving and how the muscles are functioning.
Yeah.
And the issue, and you know, then, I mean, in other words, like we were saying before, the issue is the function of the machine, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And so just to clarify, breathing does take place at a deeper level. So when air comes into your lungs, and then there's a transfer of oxygen to your blood, and the blood carries the oxygen to cells all over your body. Well, that's a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And so if you define that as, or if you think of that mainly as what breathing is about, that transfer and then this, you know, oxygenation of your blood, of cells, then you could, you know, improve on that process by paying attention to breathing through your nostrils. And you can improve on that process, let's say, by breathing deeply, more deeply. Mm-hmm. But that's leaving out that's leaving out the actual process by which we get the air in and out of the lungs.
Yeah.
Which is not simply a matter of breathing through your nostrils, but how your ribs are moving, how your diaphragm is moving. Mm. And those movements depend on bodily coordination. Mm. So if you want to look at the whole picture, you've got to look at bodily coordination. And from that point of view, you've got to ask why are we not breathing efficiently to begin with? And again, we've got the same problem. The back isn't working properly.
Yeah.
The trunk isn't supported properly. The ribs can't move properly. The diaphragm can't move properly. So we're interfering with breathing. We think that we can do something to improve it and then justify that on the basis of identifying that we've oxygenated the cells better. But that begs the question why we interfere to begin with.
Yeah, like as though the cellular respiration component were really the only important part of the breathing process, like right. as though we're not an entire organism that's designed to breathe in the first place.
Yeah. And that has to make, in a human and in other animals, we have to make bodily movements to do that. Yeah.
Have to make bodily
movements. So the way, just to put it as the other said, we said that the back has a design. You can't just, you know, kind of haphazardly try to relax muscles or treat specific muscles. The back works, has a particular design. The muscles are meant to lengthen and tone between bony contacts. That's how the back is meant to work. And the extensors along the whole back and front of the body. Same with the shoulder girdle, which depends on that larger system and has its own design. And same with breathing. Breathing, you can identify how it works. You can identify how the trunk naturally supports, how the ribs move more fully, how the back works more fully, how the diaphragm moves more freely. Mm-hmm. And that's not just a fix or an attempt to correct it. It's something that can be restored and work according to its design.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and when you understand that, you could apply it to vocalizing, you could apply it to...
Yeah, yeah. I was like just going to ask if you want to go on to I didn't want to jump into it, but that's another really interesting implication of this. Like, what does the subject have to say about vocalizing?
Yeah, well, in order to look at breathing, you have to look at vocalizing, because otherwise you're not really looking at one of the primary kind of interferences.
Okay.
You know, so it's related, you know, and the vocal system as well is partly a holistic system that depends on the working of the whole.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, it's always the same answer, you know, well, you know, always depends on the whole, but that's the thing. This is what you're enumerating here. Like there are different systems that we can look at and get clear on, even though the answer is always the whole system. You know?
Yeah, but we could be very specific. I mean, you know, like the shoulders are dependent on the whole system, but there's a very definite problems that happen in the shoulder.
Yeah.
That you can feel, you can see, you can work with. For instance,
yeah.
almost always a shoulder problem is going to be related to overusing the flexors of the forearm that work the fingers, that move the hand and fingers. Almost always it's going to be involved too much work in the biceps and pectoral region. Almost always it's going to involve a loss of tone in the back where the shoulders really connect into. So you're not just vaguely trying to get the shoulders to work with the whole, you're actually bringing about a lengthened, widened support of the shoulder girdle as part of the support of the trunk. You're bringing about lengthened working of the flexors of the arm and forearm, upper arm and forearm. Yeah. The hand will open up. So you're really, you know, concretely improving how that whole system functions.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, knowing what we do to put the thing in a malfunctioning way in the first place, you know, like knowing all the things that you said, you can use that to help yourself out. Once you get it malfunctioning, you know, like you can realize that, you know, your shoulder might need some support or something like this. You know, like we were talking about beneficial positions before.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you counsel students to do, for example, when they're on the floor and we're working, you know, on the principles of the whole, but we're looking specifically at the shoulders, you know, putting a pillow underneath the elbow and the hands to raise it somewhat, you know, to give a little bit extra pull here or something, you know, yeah, like any number of those extra helps, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, but not just to give an extra pull, but I mean, in the same way that we support the head and the upper back and the whole trunk to let the back muscles let go, in the same way we could support the arm so that the flexors let go. So I when you say you're right, it's helping to give it an extra pull, but it's that it just sounds like that's just sort of pulling on it or stretching it, but it's not just stretching it. It's you're in the same way that we could support the head and trunk, you can use positions to support the arm, or even just a simple position like this, where I have my elbow on the table.
Yeah,
have your fingers extended. You could think of your fingers lengthening, and that alone will help. That's a position that will help, if you spend a little time on it, help the fingers to lengthen out of the forearm, or to put it differently, it will help the forearm muscles to begin to stop shortening and pulling on the fingers, so that the fingers can lengthen out of the forearm. Mm. And there's a position, just like you said, just like the other ones. But in this case, it's helping the lower arm and the upper limb as a whole, mm-hmm. and not just the back or the trunk. Yeah, that's a very concrete, that's a good thought, because there are lots of things you could do like that if you've interfered. And how useful for people who are always, if you're holding a mouse all the time and you're gripping it all the time, as so many people are these days, you find people who they're so accustomed to gripping with the hand and overusing the flexors of the forearm that act on the hand and fingers, that they need to recover the basic open use of the hand that we, have when we're supporting weight on the hand, or let's say. Mm-hmm. And so learning just to place your hand on a surface so that you're recovering that use of the hand and opening the hand and not overworking the flexors is a really useful position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not vague. It's not haphazard. It's a very concrete supported position, which enables you to organize your awareness so that you can actually bring about improvements. I mean, how useful is that for me? Learning, playing piano for years, year upon year, when I learned that I could just open my hand and leave it flat on the keys, wow, that was a eye-opener for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because normally you're just seeing the keys and reacting to them, like instantly just sort of doing any sort of movements and muscle actions in response.
Yeah. I never knew there was an alternative. I mean, we use our fingers all the time. And,
yeah. Well, that could be a thing that we talk about in the future. You know, what's it like, what's like necessary to extricate ourselves from those habitual actions or something, but.
Yeah. Well, you mean more than these positions, do you mean?
Well, I'm thinking, when someone comes to you and you're learning about advantageous positions, beneficial positions, learning about how to sort of get the system working again, like get the muscles lengthening again and getting them restored to function. How do you deal with, say, the piano? Really, just like you said, how do you deal with it? How do you interact with it in a way where you're not interacting with it harmfully? I think that this is a topic where I know some people in our work, you just keep your neck free and you'll be fine. I think that there's a lot more and I know that there's a lot more to it than that. And that we can definitely speak about that because I think it's a rich topic.
Hmm. Well, you mean how to apply, let's say, the use of the shoulder and arm to piano playing?
Yeah.
We could talk about that.
Yeah. And like the experience of it too.
Yeah.
Sometimes, the strangeness of it. I think that's interesting, but.
Yeah, we could talk, that's sort of, yeah, it kind of goes towards skill. Yeah, we could talk about mm-hmm. that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we've covered the back and the extensors of the back as one system. We've covered the shoulders and arm, covered the breathing.
And a little bit about, touched a little bit on vocalizing.
And breathing. Yeah, good. Just wanted to.
Yeah. That's a lot. I mean, it's like one general topic with, like a couple of different specific things today. So,
And I think it's important to mention because you know, we, I think last time we spoke about some of the skills and the, you know, when you're developing a curriculum for bodily awareness, you have various skills like paying attention or kinesthetic awareness, but there's very concrete knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking here in the book, just the hand alone, there are two chapters in the book about how the hand works and how to use it, because we don't normally think that if we have attention related problem, that there's something to learn related to the hand, but there is, mm-hmm. because the tension, let's say if you're a musician and you're having tension in the forearm or carpal tunnel problems, is directly related to how we're using the hand. So to address that problem, treating the carpal tunnel is not going to suffice, because that's a symptom of how we're overusing this system, which we now have to learn to use in a new way. So there's real concrete knowledge. Sensory motor awareness includes concrete knowledge about how particular systems work, like your hand and arm,
yeah,
back, et cetera. Yeah. And I thought it was worth touching on. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Well, yeah. So as we return, you know, next week, I think we're going to be talking about stress. I mean, is that right? Or maybe even some more in breathing. But, you know, we're going to return to topics like this. You know, we're going to really be returning to sensory motor awareness topics, it seems like, over the next few podcast episodes. So yeah. Come back. You know, I'm looking forward to speaking about this with you, Ted. I'm looking forward to, you know, the audience hearing about this. So if you're seeing this, please like and subscribe. It's very important for us. It's just one of those things. Please give us a review on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll be back.
Yeah, and maybe we will talk about stress. Maybe that's our topic next week, James.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.